The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Kia ora, I'm Senga and welcome to Heritage South, the show connecting Southlanders to their heritage and where we talk heritage happenings around the region. The Southland Oral History Project is an absolute gem in the Southland Heritage Jewel Box, and it is this year marking a significant milestone, celebrating 20 years of collecting, preserving and sharing the different voices of Murihiku Southland. We launched this year's Southland Heritage Month with this as our focus. And we were joined by many of those who over the years have contributed to its development and growth, with freelance historian Helen Frizzell invited as a special guest speaker. And we had a peek at the new strategic plan that will take the project through towards 2030. And of course, there was cake, a very special cake. For this episode, I'm joined by Southland Oral History Project Coordinator Rosie Stather, who for the last 8 years has been the driving force of the project and is now steering it into the next 20 years. So kia ora and welcome, Rosie.
Thank you, Senga.
I know. And you and I talk oral history a lot.
We do.
I'm a big fan of the Southland Oral History Project. And it was not surprising, but kind of surprising that actually it's been 20 years. So tell us just a little bit about the genesis of the Southland Oral History Project. How did it come to be?
Well, as it turned out, I was doing a little bit of research so that we could get a few facts and figures together on how the project started. And we actually discovered that there was an original Southland Oral History Project that was started in the late 1990s, also at the Invercargill Library. Alan Bryce and Colin Gray put together a team of volunteers and managed to interview 18 people. So that kind of formed like a nub of the project. But the current iteration of the project came into being, obviously 20 years ago now, as a result of work that Heritage South did, looking at the changing demographics of the Southern region and all the things that were kind of changing around people's lives and experiences, and the realisation that it was really, really important to capture the memories of people who'd grown up in like the 1920s, 30s, 40s, before all those memories were lost. So they got some really good support from local and national funding and set the project on its current course.
But of course, I think that the fact that it has not just survived 20 years, but is growing and continuing to develop and planning for the future is not just the support of an organisation such as Heritage South, but there is another key player in all of this, isn't there?
Yeah, so, I mean, we are indebted to the Invercargill City Council for their support. Specifically, Marianne Foster from the library was a staunch supporter of the project from the beginning and gave it its home at the library. So once you've got that base and then you've got that ongoing support, which allows a coordinator to be employed, it was a Rebecca Amundsen before myself. Yeah, it just makes a significant difference to the success of the project in terms of its longevity.
And I think keeping that impetus of the work that has begun going, because yes, it's about recording those memories of people, and that in itself is a big part of the project, but it's not the only thing that happens. So it's all of the things that happen after those recordings are actually made as well. So, you know, you've got a number of people involved that you coordinate to make all of that happen. And I suppose that the work, having that repository through the library and archives, is what helps to keep it alive.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And it's not a small collection. How many oral histories do we have in our collection?
So at the moment, if you were to go onto our catalogue, you would find 647, but there are actually probably more like 700 because there are a few lurking around in my office that have yet to be catalogued. So, yeah, so we're sitting, I new recordings that are being done now are the numbers that I assigned to them are in the 700s.
It's really exciting.
Yeah, well, it was about in the, I think the 200s, 250s when I started. Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is a significant oral history collection. And while it has obviously a strong Murihiku Southland focus, it's not just for Southland. It's actually for New Zealand and beyond. So who are the kinds of people that would actually make use of a collection such as this?
We get quite a lot of approaches from families. And particularly at the moment, I've noticed we're getting grandkids who are emailing me. They're obviously interested in family history and they're doing their Google searches and finding that we hold interviews with grandparents or great aunts and uncles. And so, yeah, so we share those with those families. Obviously, yeah, the kind of the family knowledge of the fact that those interviews have been done has been lost. So that's what makes the catalogue so important. But we also get a lot of use by researchers and writers, and they could be people from all over New Zealand and even outside of New Zealand, because a lot of the material that we cover, it's really good from a kind of social science, social studies point of view, because we've got such a wealth and depth of material around the kind of domestic situations and also farming and agriculture. That's that everyday life material, which is just so valuable because it's not the kind of material that you tend to find in your kind of history books, which are focused more on big events and landmark events in New Zealand history. So it's that everyday, those everyday lived experiences, which are the real draw card for people coming into the project.
Mm. I know, and I can hear it as you're talking about it, that you have a real passion and love for the project. What would be one of your favourite oral history subjects, do you think, Rosie?
It's really, yeah, it's hard to kind of pin something down, but just an area that I've been doing a little bit of work around recently is the histories that we've managed to capture about retail in Invercargill in particular. So I'm talking about people who talked about their working life with companies like H&J Smiths and Whitcomb and Toombs. Yeah, just the difference kind of how those companies worked compared to how kind of, I guess, bigger chains and overseas owned chains worked compared to when things were more local. And just the amount of material, the breadth of things that were available for sale at that time, I don't think maybe we appreciate just what was actually, you know, you could actually buy in little old Invercargill back then. Yeah. I mean, I really would love to be able to time travel and go back to some of these stores and see what they were actually, you know, they were like.
Yeah, yeah, that's quite true. And I think for me, there's been a number of serendipitous gems that I found that I hadn't even really been looking for. And that's where the value of that cataloguing and the abstracting that goes along. So, of course, abstracting is when each of the key moments in an interview is captured and put in a document so that you can see at, say, 14 minutes in, this person talked about, and they might have only mentioned it for a couple of minutes, but it might be just the thing you're looking for. And I guess my favourite would be listening to Liz Miller, who obviously I remember as the children's librarian from when I was a child, but talking about working at the Grand Hotel. And if you wanted to have a listen to that, it is actually on the Heritage South website under the Grand Hotel page. And you could recall her story and someone could share it, but listening to her say it, tell that story in her own voice, is actually the magic. That's what makes it really magic. But of course, we are looking into the future and we have just got a new strategic plan launched, Rosie. So tell us about this new phase that we're going to be entering into with the project.
So one of the things that really struck me when I was looking at the strategic plan, which we review and relaunch every 5 years, is that we have got this amazing collection. And whilst we're not saying that we won't be carrying on collecting material, new material, because I still think that's really important, and there are some gaps in the collection that it would be good to fill, I think we need to start really thinking about making people more aware of the value of the collection and getting better access and use of it. And I'm particularly keen, through working with our library programming staff, in really engaging our young people in the collection. So I've been doing quite a bit of work with how we can come up with ways of making that material accessible to our young people, so a way, in a way that like really engages them, so that they can listen to stories of the past and then reflect on how it's different from how they live now. And it is so much more engaging when you can hear people talking about those experiences rather than reading about them in a book. So, yeah. So it's the access and use, I think, is important. Alongside, I guess, the regional leadership, we're in a unique position because of the support we get from both the Invercargill City Council and Heritage South to really help others around the region who may have material in their collection. So I'm thinking of local museums that might have material that was recorded some years ago that's on tape that is really very vulnerable now to deterioration and it needs to be digitized. So we can help support that digitization process. And we can also incorporate that material in our repository, which also then safeguards it for the long term, because we have very good systems and processes in place in terms of how we keep that digital material and making sure that it's available for the next 50 years, the next 100 years, however far into the future.
And I don't think any of us listening would underestimate the value of listening to someone from your family tell you about themselves. I know that I wish I could listen to my grandmother tell me about her daily life. And so I think, you know, there is something very, very special about hearing those voices. Of course, you are only one person, and I know that you are you have a great team of volunteers, but that you would love to hear from people who might be interested in knowing if there was a way they could contribute to the work of the project. Would that be true, Rosie?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's quite a daunting area for some people, I think, to think about moving into volunteering for a project like this, because some of the aspects of the work are quite specialised. And obviously, when you're recording people's oral histories, you really do need to do a good job in terms of the questions you ask and the recordings that you do. So we do have specialist recording equipment that people need to use. But we've got an awful lot of support available in terms of training and coaching to help people develop those skills. And then for those people who are not that keen on the idea of having themselves, you know, like doing the interviewing, there are plenty of other roles. We've got, as you mentioned earlier, about the abstracting. That's a really vital part of the whole process, because a catalogue entry that says that we interviewed a certain person on a certain date, it doesn't tell you anything. It's like looking at a book cover and you've just got the author and a title, but you don't know anything about what's in the book inside. So the abstracts are a window into what is inside that oral history. And abstracting is something that people can do either in the library or they can do it in the comfort of their own home. Perfectly happy for people to work remotely on that. And then there's also other things that might suit people around cataloguing and kind of that, some of the more organisational aspects of the project, because we're dealing with a lot of material which has to be sorted and itemised. So, yeah, there's lots of scope for different skill sets if people are wanting to contribute.
And if they did want to get hold of you, Rosie, how do they reach you?
Well, the easiest way is at the library. I would encourage people to reach out by email, I think, which is really simple, just SOHP at ilibrary.co.nz. I only work part-time and I am quite busy with meetings and going out and about in the community. So, yeah, email is a really good place. We also, if you were to go to the library website, there's a couple of forms there that you can fill out if you're interested in volunteering or if you know of somebody or yourself, you know, that wants to be interviewed, you can also fill out that form too.
Thank you so much for joining me, Rosie. It's always lovely to chat. And thank you for joining me on Heritage South. The show is available as a podcast from the Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download this episode. Just look for us in the Programs tab. Links can also be found on Facebook through Radio Southland's page, facebook.com/Radio Southland, and also on Heritage South at Heritage South NZ. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast platform through the Access Media app or on Spotify.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.